Welcome to the Future Chia Podcast. I'm Leon Fitzpatrick.
And I'm Jos Stalla.
And we'll be talking about everything from Taoism to design to traditional Chinese medicine and everything in between.
And we talk about how to make purpose out of life and life out of purpose. Whatever that means.
Join us for our next amazing adventure into the unknown. So here we are again in having a very eventful day up here in the mountains.
Yeah, we've got this beautiful, super slick city, Mini Cooper, John Cooper's work, tuned to the max. Yeah. The thing is a beast. It's so fast on the track, on the streets. It's just incredible, especially the winding roads. And now we're living in the bush. We're living in Crystal Water,
on
this commune.
Dirt tracks.
On dirt tracks, and it started raining, and now the Mini got blocked in, and is absolutely not doing anything because the power in the engine is simply too powerful for it to do any benefits on nature.
So you can't have too much power.
Yeah.
Too much power.
Yes. So it's just obviously, once you live in the country, you know, you've got to be aware you may have decide for a different car.
Well, so you think the low profile tires on the front wheel drive 2-liter twin turbocharged lowered race car isn't working quite for the environment?
Yeah, it seemed to be.
I'm surprised.
Tell
me about that.
It's causing struggles.
But on the way in here, is a windy road. It's great fun.
Oh, just once you pass the dirt aspect, and once you pass all the flooding aspect, and you actually got dry road. This is the only thing that can actually keep up with you is a motorbike.
Yes, yeah, I can see that happening.
Yeah. It's incredible, that thing around the corners. I mean, I love that advertising that when Mini started, 10 years ago, those advertising on TV were great. Like this guy takes the Mini and spins it up on the road in the mountains, and on top of the mountains, he opens up a can of soft drink and windscreen, everything is just like, can't see anything. He's just shit everywhere. And then it's like, ... Mini, it's the car. And it said it what it is.
Yeah.
It's just for corners. Yeah.
And this is your fifth one.
Yeah, my fifth Mini, yeah.
So your first one was the original.
The original Mini Cooper.
Two-door.
Yes.
And how did you fit in that?
The interesting thing is that Mini Coopers look small, but they're actually very, very efficient space-wise.
Yeah.
So they're actually made for tall people, so it works really well. So I have so much space in that thing,
and
I'm 1.96 meters, and I'm leaning back, and they're the best car.
Yeah, it's a very clever design.
Yeah, it's cute, it's individual, it doesn't look anything mundane.
No.
And in particular, it doesn't, when you drive it, it doesn't feel mundane, yeah?
Yeah.
And because that's obviously one of the bigger things, because we can't get around not driving. You know, you've got to go. We have to cover distance.
Very
maybe
current.
Soon we got the ability to levitate.
Soon?
Soon.
What do you mean soon? Like?
There's a lot of research. I listened to this podcast today about this. The psychologist who now teaches telekinesis and actually bodily movements without you actually using any of your bodily functions. So it's levitational aspect that...
Without using your bodily functions.
Yeah, you're actually using your mind. So what yogis talk about levitating, etc., which was first come to the public with the Transcendental Meditation with the Maharishi. That's when he first time talked about levitation. And because it only... That was from that Time magazine when they did a photo of a TM meditator who had the energy moving through the body too strong, and it generated what they called frog hopping. So the body just actually moved up. And
off the ground.
Yeah, off the ground for about 30, 40, 50 centimeters moved up. So it was because the energy was so strong and the body jerked and needed to express itself. And a photographer from the Time magazine actually took a snapshot of that, and it landed on the front cover of the Time magazine and said, transcendental meditation, the Maharishi claims levitation. That was in 1968. So that was the first time that the Western public heard about levitating. And those who have read the autobiography of a yogi are very familiar with the levitational skills of the yogi. And and then this new guy, this who is now on board and teaches people this sort of like telekinesis, moving objects without touching. Yeah. And it's now taken place in the academic research in the West.
Okay.
And that includes also levitation. So according to them, it's within us. So one day we will be able to actually move from A to B without actually using a car.
Would that be like teleport, like changing location, like teleportation, or just
most likely it is like just boom, you're suddenly there. Because in the spirit world you travel distances without actually suddenly appear. So with your mind you can be instantly in Europe.
Yeah.
You can be instantly at the end of the world. So we know that we can do that. And when we dream, we have all kinds of experiences, So who tells us that this is not possible in form?
Yeah.
I mean, when a Tai Chi master punches you, you know exactly, it's sort of not really a travel pace or time involved. It happens sort of instantaneously.
Yeah, that's true. There's no... It's very hard to pass that too. When you see it happening, it's like a frame missing out of a film. It's one frame, another frame, and you don't see what happens in between, because I've seen it multiple times and I still can't process the moment in between the movement and the person being thrown or the strike happening. It's like a missing brain cut, because when you watch films and movies, like it's 24 frames a second is a standard film rate, but our brain has to join the dots because we're seeing a single frame and a single frame and a single frame, but our brain stitches them together so it allows it to flow smoothly. Otherwise, it would appear as flickering and frame by frame. But when something like that happens and you don't actually see the move.
That's according to the way I understand from a Chinese medicine perspective. That's because the brain is still under the instructions of the limited awareness.
Because it's
an organic
object
that is following the our understanding.
Yeah.
So what happens if you change the understanding?
Yeah. And there's a new set of rules, a set of program.
Suddenly, molecules... dismantle and appear again.
Well, it's interesting because in science fiction, which I've always been interested in, because it's supposedly grounded elements of science, which is like technology. If technology advances, we get to A, B, and C, and the fiction aspect being like, what's the wondrous, what's the imaginative approaches we could have with technology in the future. A lot of science fiction is based on that, generally speaking, is pushing what we know now to the future, and often it influences the future. We see things in movies or in comics or whatever that are fanciful. Even Isaac Asimov wrote the whole sort of rules of robotics, the three rules of robotics, which is science fiction, but now that's actually being used in to help train robots and AI. There's always a art imitating life or life imitating art thing happening. So I'm always fascinated by watching sci-fi, reading sci-fi movies. There's always something that grabbed my attention, because also in design we also think about the future a lot, like what's the most coolest futuristic version of the phone or the car. And when you're drawing it and coming up with it, you want it to be as low as possible or as wide as possible, or it floats off the ground, doesn't use traditional technology. So a lot of times people's imagination is what influences things like Star Trek, where they had the teleporter. So they'd go, beam me up. And now this ray of beam would appear and they would reappear. Someone wrote a really interesting article about this, and there's a whole theories around that, because supposedly the teleportation technology was destroying you, breaking every single atom down in your body, transmitting it wirelessly, energetically, and then reconstituting you somewhere else. So it's actually not you. So every time in Star Trek they go in a teleporter, they're being killed and rebirth, whatever. So someone wrote this whole thing, like, how many times have Spock and Captain Kirk been destroyed and reconstituted? And this whole dystopian idea that comes, like, what makes it you? If you're being broken down and transmitted and rebuilt, is that actually you anymore, or is it some other version of you? So it was really interesting. And then, like, Back to the Future, our version of levitating and moving is the hoverboard, which, remember that came out, and the flying cars, hovering cars, and everyone was like, well, that was set in 2016 or 2015, Back to the Future 2. So we were told, thinking, in 30 years from 1985, there'll be flying cars and hoverboards. And of course, here we are in 2024 and There's no hoverboards, there's no flying cars, so there's always an expectation.
Bok minis,
yeah,
country.
getting stuck in the dirt. Right. So this is what interests me about all this, because it's exciting. The future's exciting. Like, you know, a little brand called Future Thinking. Even this mug I've made for our podcast, I've got design, destiny, future. That word it's interesting to me, because, you know, in 1 second, we're in the future. You know, from when we started this podcast, this is the future. This is a different world. God knows what's changed on the planet since we started this conversation. I'm sure a lot's happened. But I'm always curious about the intent to create the future. Like the designer who sits with a blank sheet of paper and draws the car or the motorbike or the phone or the hoverboard. The concept designers in movies who come up with, you know, ways to visualize technology and do special effects. Your famous sci-fi writers like your Asimovs and all these people who wrote, you know, Philip K. Dick, who wrote, you know, Blade Runner, or Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep? All these very formative things that really defined a lot of that genre, but also, again, influenced reality. A lot of people wanted to bring these technologies into real life, and they're constantly trying to reverse engineer this or how to do that. The way what you're describing is, to me, fascinating, because we so often miss the internal elements, the training elements that would come with doing that. So we look at, like, most superheroes in comic books are, there's a radioactive accident and accidentally and suddenly they have superpowers, you know, or they're mutated, or they're an alien, like Superman, who's come to Earth and just so happens that it's a different sun and he gets superpowers and it's stunt. There's no training involved. You know, occasionally we have Batman or Iron Man who develop their own tools and techniques to overcome that. But those are all that established versions of the future or alternate realities that I think are interesting. And I'm always curious about, you know, we can design the future, we can plan something, and this is what's going to look like in 10 years or 5 years. And this is what we're constantly doing. I mean, town planning, designing buildings, because buildings take years to design, then years to build. Cars, most cars you see on the street, started their life 5 to 10 years ago. You know, the sketch took years to develop, then they had to engineer it. So we often end up in a world that looks like the future, but it's already the past. So there's a constant.
Yeah.
And I'm always curious about what is the future really, because we don't really ever get there yet. We're there all the time. So recently, a man named Marcello Gandini passed away. He's an Italian designer. And a lot of the articles about him is calling him, and I think rightly so, one of the greatest car designers to ever live. He designed about 50 or 60 different cars, like the Stratos Zero, which is this beautiful, incredible low wedge shape. He also designed the actual Lancia Stratos, the rally car, which is really famous. The first BMW 5 Series, the first Volkswagen Polo, the Lamborghini Miura, the Lamborghini Countach.
All right, yeah.
So he's got about 60 of these cars, and the Renault Turbo 5, the original Renault hatchback with the giant
wheel. Yeah.
So all these very iconic vehicles came from his, and then how many times has that been imitated? You look at the standard wedge shape. If you look up wedge shape supercar, you'll see, you know, all forms of cars end up with this low raked windshield, very wide, very triangular. Yeah. You know, we talked about the Cybertruck a few episodes ago. That's very heavily influenced from this wedge faceted shape, which arguably he created. That was that. And that was imitated from then. And one of the articles I read about him was sort of saying he's the person who designed the future, because back then those cars in the 60s and 70s, you know, designing those things. And if you look up the Stratos Zero, for example, or, you know, the first Countach, that's alien. You know, cars had tiny little wheels and they sat very high and had chrome hubcaps and fins. And suddenly this thing comes out, looks like a UFO landed. And where does that come from? That's some sort of inspiration, or I think, you know, any creative process is tapping into something that's from somewhere else. We're talking about this quite a lot. You know, you're accessing energy, or you're transmitting energy or ideas into something and bring it to life on a piece of paper. And you can't say that he looked at a car before that to design that car, the Stratos, for example, or the Countach. There's nothing to reference in the car world. So if you look at the 1950s or 60s car, you're going to end up with a pink Cadillac or something. You had a lot of very... So the idea that he was pulling something in from other locations to create this vehicle that would then look futuristic in that time and age, but is also currently used as a template to what we consider to be futuristic even now, even though we still have combustion engines and wheels and they're not able to levitating. So I guess it's an open-ended question about how much can we sit and intentionally design this future versus what actually is manifesting based on the things that we're doing we don't know are changing the future and destiny and what that means. Like, are we going somewhere that's preset? You know, we talk about destiny and purpose and path all the time. And if you look at the Vedic scriptures, there's quite often a path that's laid out that we seem to be following, perhaps. But I'm never really sure if we're living in something that's really the future or really what it's supposed to be, or it's a version from the past that we're just sort of currently inhabiting.
I think we are forced to do something new because way back when this designer in the 50s and 60s created these incredible designs, there was no fear or pressure on him because life was still normal in what you would consider normal, because there was no existential angst and such. You know, people came out of the war, but still it wasn't all like their whole existential crisis was not identified, was not triggered. But now it is. You know, it's just like in not everyone, but you can say pretty much like half the population is just really asking themselves the question, why am I here for?
Yep.
And the fact that, I mean, according to psychics, a lot of souls are leaving the physical, you know, which is what they call the excess death. You know, it might be from a psychic perspective, they would say a lot of them are actually suiciding. They're actually leaving.
Done.
Yeah, because it is like, because a lot of people who've got the sensitivity of the spirit within them can't make sense of the way it's going, because whatever the negative is, it's just having too much an impact on them. And whereas the designers of the 50s and 60s, they didn't have the fear factor that we have now. So now we are under totally new stress factors that we never had before.
Yep.
And when you listen to the top anthropologists, will look way back into the whole history of humanity. There, when they are interviewed in podcasts, they say this time, 2024, is unprecedented before. It's never been before like that.
Yeah.
Where so many factors are coming together.
Yeah.
That undermining our reason for being here.
Yeah.
And undermining our purpose and understanding of who we are. Where we just like, we were, for the whole evolution, we always had the drive to move towards.
Yeah.
But it was never the question, what is it towards?
Yeah, no, you're right. Also in that aspect of sci-fi, which I think came into its own post-war, 50s, 60s, 70s, the automotive design shifting the landscape, fashion, music.
Mm.
You know, look what happened in the 60s and 70s with music.
Yeah.
It's sort of like there's optimism there in many ways, like the space age. You know, like Kennedy had that great speech in the early 60s, and he said, we're not going to go to get to the moon because it's easy. We're going to do it because it's hard.
Mm-hmm.
And that, like, you know, you can't think of presidents or leaders giving speeches like that anymore in terms of their inspirational. It's like, we're going to do this. It's going to take a long time. It won't be easy, but we're going to do it because it should be done.
Yeah.
You know, designing rockets and all that stuff. Let's go to the stars. Let's do these things that are great. Now you do that and they call you crazy and you're a wacky billionaire because you're building rockets and we should solve the problems here on Earth. And there's always arguments on why we should and shouldn't do things. Like, it's endless. You know, there's almost no point in asking the audience anymore what they think. Fucking cares, just do it. As long as you're not harming people. And there's another argument that had me there about that whole thing, right? It's a debate. But the idea that we'll shoot down someone who's trying to change something or do something different is interesting. Like, to be optimistic is you know, we had this conversation a couple of times. It's, if you're optimistic or happy or positive, people are like, what's wrong with you? Like, you know. And I think in this sci-fi design, even to create art, music, literature, in this day and age, there's so much pressure now to say something political or to be woke or to say the right thing or to tread carefully or fit inside this thing because you want to make sure your work gets listened to.
Yeah, but when someone of the 50s, if they put all the focus on designing a great car, there was a lot of desire on a large scale to wanting that.
Yeah.
But the desires for things have really shifted fundamentally.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are not really interested in a lot of things anymore. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's another thing also. And another factor is obviously we really are stressed from within by experiencing illnesses, internal illnesses we never had before.
Yeah.
Like on such a large scale.
Yeah.
So if you have like pressing symptoms in you, say this be like a metabolic disorder.
Yeah.
You know, that means, you know, you constantly have to be aware of what you're eating because you get bloating straight away. And so that means, you know, food that 30, 40 years ago, yeah, you go out for dinner. That's a pizza. That's a beer.
Yeah.
Just didn't think twice. Like, yeah. I remember the 80s, the 1980s, no one thought about food allergies.
No.
Yeah. It's just like, come Friday, you go out.
Yeah.
And we went to Pizza Hut and $5, eat as much as you can. So I did a new record every Friday.
Yeah.
So, and then on top of it, you just drink as much as you can.
Yeah.
You know, so it, there was no one there saying, oh, I can't eat today because I've got allergies.
Yeah.
You know, so I think like that didn't exist. So, so you live carefree.
Yeah.
You know, when I came to Australia in 1981, it was an amazing country because you lived carefree.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so the 80s pretty much peaked in that regard. The 90s sort of came in and then sort of like the first allergies started. That's been look at when you look at asthma problems, when you look at allergies, food allergies. Now there's not a person without food allergies.
Yeah.
Yes. So if you have to be very careful of what you're consuming because it either triggers bloating, stomach pain,
yeah,
or it triggers fatigue next day and things like that, you think you don't have much energy left to look at what else is there that attracts you. You're too consumed with the symptoms.
Yeah.
Yes.
So how do you think? How do you think broadly or have vision or think about things like on a larger scale or
I think the design is shifting towards health.
Yeah.
Yes. It's like if I don't feel good within myself, the design doesn't really make much difference.
No, I can see that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just like, and if you feel good, it doesn't matter what you drive. That's true. I remember that. I remember that back in the day when it was like, you know, I had a bomb-dot car, but if you hire the car, feels like a Lamborghini. And if you feel really shit, well, remember that when I got into the 90s, when I started my health center, in the mid-90s, I was so successful. It was just flying, and I bought a new BMW every year.
I remember, yeah.
Yeah, and but many times I was so stressed out, so I had beautiful M3 or Z4, and then I was too consumed with the stressful thoughts of negative nature.
Yeah.
And I couldn't really just sit there and enjoy the car.
Yeah.
And I noticed after a while, I don't actually enjoy it. I'm looking forward towards the next car.
Yeah.
So I got trapped in that, looking, okay, I want to get the next car. Maybe that's when I'm feeling good. So I experienced how the excessive 90s in terms of goal settings and becoming successful, how that impacted on your inability to enjoy the moment.
Yeah.
Yes. And then obviously then I realized, wow, this is bullshit. That sucks. Yeah. And I got obviously let go of all that thing. And at the end, about 30 years ago, that's when I decided that's it and got really back into the internal world. Yes. Yeah. Back in the internal world, what I mean by that is like exactly how I did as a hippie.
Yeah.
You smoke a joint and everything's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so this time, then I realized, okay, I got to feel the chi within myself. So, more and more people have that realization because when I get people in clinic, they can't enjoy life anymore. They feel like their life's over because they can't eat the food they want to eat.
Yeah.
They can't drink the drinks they want to drink. They feel like they're in prison because there's too many regulations on them that they can't do. So if I withdrew the treatments and they start changing their life and suddenly the allergies go and suddenly they can eat again, suddenly they can drink again, you know, they feel free again.
Yeah.
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 So you're like, wow, I'm myself again.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so they have realized, okay, unless I understand what happens within, whatever is on the outer can't really do much.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think maybe that's where design is heading. Design becomes internal rather than external.
Yeah.
Yeah. And in whichever way we need to find ways how to regulate the inner world.
Yeah. And I think that's just separate from education. And I did helped run a design school, a small design school for several years. And I did realize at the end of it that it was difficult to get people and just train them in those skills that there almost needed to be a whole process involved where you basically had them do some physical training as well, like some martial arts, diet and other things to actually get to the full access of the potential. Getting someone in a room, you know, we did evening classes after they had a day of doing who knows what other stresses and come in and try and give them new information and have them work on their skills. I realized, I'm like, there needs to be some more holistic approach to teaching.
Yeah.
And I think education in general is missing that too. It's like it's all very cerebral and here's the tools that you need and here's the, but also they give them lofty ideas around, the future and not even the future, but like with theory without any real grounding around it. So there's sort of a missing element around that. There's a guy named Alfred Luce who was a writer who wrote about, I think, the Bauhaus and about design. And he said that the educator must arm people with all the tools they needed to contribute to society in a way that's not just technical, but also spiritual. He used the word spiritual. And I think what he's getting at is there's other things, there's other elements in education that go beyond technical or theoretical. So you can look at those as being these core things. Like I chatted to a friend of mine earlier and I said, like, a lot of education is going very theory, heavy on theory and design thinking and all these things. And then they make the technical aspects secondary. So here's all this lofty thing. And then the technical skills are not drilled in. So therefore you don't really have the confidence in drawing or using the CAD computer or making things by hand and tools. But if you flip it around, you can go, let's focus heavily on the trade of drawing, hammer, nail, tool, you know, draw, computer, and then let them discover that stuff on their own later on in terms of the why or the purpose. You're better to find that path on your own, perhaps, and be trained. But there's also a missing piece there. That missing piece to me is this, what I would look at when I've done in my training is like the martial arts aspect, which has led to things like spirituality and other elements that I'm still trying to get under a handle of because it's quite difficult. But there's some other aspect there that's not being taught or introduced as being part of the same system in terms of education. Mm-hmm. There has to be some other way to bring those things together. Like you look at like primary or schools or grade schools or high schools, quite often you spend all day there. So there's a cafeteria where you have lunch or you might have breakfast there, and there's a gym or physical education classes, all those things. But if the food is terrible and the environment's bad, not learning the right thing, and the physical education class is missing something, you're also not missing out on the possibility of doing it properly. So I think those, you know, starting earlier on as kids or younger people in terms of getting them that across the breadth of things, not just isolating.
Mm-hmm.
To be good at this, you must be good at that one thing. Or teaching it out of order. I just think there's a missing component there that I think that's a huge part of the future is about how we set people up or how they learn or how they achieve that potential or discover themselves differently than later.
Yes, which now has a new drive.
Yeah.
Yeah, back in the, like when you look at pre-COVID times, the drive was feel good is affiliated with the next thing I'm going to get by the next phone, the next car, the next house.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the feel good was affiliated with amassing the wealth externally.
Yeah.
But then obviously COVID caused such a wave of triggering the internal illnesses that were in the development for the past 30 years.
Yeah.
So it's not COVID that caused it. It just triggered it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so now the feel good is now having a totally different agenda. Yeah. It's about, okay, I got all these internal illnesses. I got these internal symptoms and I'm going to, the focus is not in terms of feel good that, like, if I got these internal symptoms, the new car won't do anything.
Yeah.
So now I need to look into, okay, what do I do about it?
Yeah.
And so that now the drive goes towards, okay, I'm going to look at, I need to change this, I need to change that. So there's obviously a whole new way of, it's almost like life design.
Yeah.
Yep. You know? So instead of focusing the design on the process of an object, now it becomes, I need to design my life.
Yeah.
Because then if I feel good within myself, then I discover a good design around me.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And obviously, in which way? To me, it looks like there's such a massive spiritual awakening in the brewing. And the spiritual awakening always has got the symptoms. Like everyone thinks spiritual awakening is like a...
All good.
Like a lightning from the sky. And it's like, wow, this ecstatic state. That's not spiritual awakening. And spiritual awakening is actually a departure from the old towards the new.
Yeah.
And that is always first comes with symptoms.
Yeah.
And one of the main symptoms is tiredness.
Yeah.
And the feeling inadequate and feeling not worthy and a lot of other self-doubt and not knowing how to belong to others, not knowing how to communicate, therefore having all kind of anxiety, social anxiety. So you've got like a whole list of symptoms. And that can't be resolved with the means of the old. A spiritual awakening means you got symptoms, internal symptoms. If you address them with the understanding of the old model, you will not attain change.
Right.
Yes?
Yeah.
So that means if you have a symptom such as tiredness, anxiety, depression, feel inadequate, etc., and you're going to seek the doctors and they're going to give you medication for it, it's not, if it's not doing anything, that means it's a spiritual awakening.
Yeah.
And what it means is that your validation and source of inspiration and energy comes from a model that is dying. So you basically have you plug in a socket of an outdated system that is dying, and your battery is now getting bad energies or wrong energies and dead energies, because the bodily functions in Chinese medicine require the qi from a source to work. So when we eat foods, it's, of course, there's nutrients in the food, but that's only one side of the coin. And the other side of the coin is the qi, and that comes from thinking, behaviors, how we meditate, mindfulness, etc. So that comes from the cosmic source. So if we aren't connected to that understanding how to actually utilize the nutrients of the food, and we're deriving our validation from a system that provides us now with bad qi.
Yeah.
Because that's when we look at the old system. For me, the old system, I look at bad qi.
Yeah.
I look at the government's bad qi. I look at everything in the Western world, bad qi.
Yeah.
And so if your plug is in that socket of an organization that delivers bad qi, then obviously you will have bad symptoms.
Yeah, well, you're not going to get away from that.
Yeah. So obviously now you've got internal symptoms, and it doesn't matter how many cars you buy.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter how many Lamborghinis and houses you have, and it doesn't matter how much plastic surgery you do, and it doesn't matter how much you do, how much Ozempic pills you drop, and how skinny you will get. It doesn't matter if you got the Ozempic face and you got like all kind of like cheekbones coming out that look like a transparent, some sort of like a robot from a movie.
Not in a good way.
Yeah. Well, if you feel bad, not working.
Yeah.
Like the Ozempic crisis is just, it's interesting because the gay scene, the queer scene is like saturated with Ozempic. Everyone's on it.
Mm.
But Ozempic doesn't work when you take drugs, and a lot of the queer scene takes drugs. So now people can't feel good because they can't take drugs, but can they take the Ozempic? Do they have the status of the Ozempic face, the beautiful cheek?
The weight loss drug?
Yeah, weight loss drug, yeah. So, like, boom, it just like, it's completely throws the scene to pieces.
Yeah.
And how many people are on this weight loss drug?
Heaps.
So that's obviously one of the old factors that actually people are trapped in the model of the old, but feeling worse as a result of it. Yeah. And so the old system that is the influence of Instagram, all that getting skinnier, all that stuff is actually bad qi.
Yeah.
So you're tapping into that, you get bad qi. So if you can't control that with medication, and you tried everything and you still feel bad, that means you are experiencing a spiritual awakening.
Right.
So now it is what it means. Your soul is waking you up and say, take that socket out of that plug of the old system and now put it into the plug of the new system.
Right.
So you need to get your support from a new system.
Yeah.
And now you're waking up that you need to actually be validated by something totally different.
Yeah.
But obviously you don't know exactly what it is.
That's the challenge.
Yeah. So therefore it needs the probing going within. But the interesting thing is there's such a massive proliferation of podcasts will talk about this sort of things. Like there's so many spiritual podcasts now, like Next Level Soul and many other podcasts. And they have millions and millions and millions of listeners.
Yeah.
And they all share their experiences. And then they got a website with it. And they got chat lines with it.
It's
everyone's experiencing this spiritual awakening. So now they obviously will have a totally different need for design.
Yeah, it's a whole new market.
Yeah, it's a whole new market.
Yeah.
It's like, what do they need?
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's from that perspective, I see so much work ahead of us.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Yeah.
Yeah, so much work. I'm always overwhelmed by how much work we have.
Yeah, well, it seems like it's because if you look, I've looked at the normal design field or process, and it's just sort of spinning in circles where it's imitation of an imitation, so everyone's copying each other.
Mm-hmm.
And so that seems like a dead end. So I don't know where that comes to an end or where it starts again. But it's quite disheartening if you look at that and you just go like, right, it's all just going nowhere. But also that, like you just said, there's an opportunity there is to step. And for probably a very long time since I started studying design, I felt like that had to happen. So I was always reluctantly in this field and wondering where it was going to go next, what's going to happen next, because you can't like design your way out of that externally, as you just said. You can't necessarily just use the same tools that you got us there in the first place. This is the whole, I think it's Einstein or someone's been attributed saying it's like doing the same thing over and over again with the same tools and expecting different results. But it's also like if we expect the future to resemble the past, we're going to miss out on a lot. You know, it's just saying by Avi Loeb, who's an astronomer who studied sort of interstellar objects like Oumuamua. And he said that, yeah, if we risk new discoveries, we expect the future to look like the past. If we expect it to see the same thing over and over again, like you mentioned, we don't have the new programming, the new software to see the new thing. So we're plugged into the old thing. If the new thing is there, it won't present itself, or won't be able to access it because we're still tethered to the wrong outlet, basically.
Yeah.
So that disconnection and reconnection thing, I think, is probably that feeling of like loss. I feel like this loss of end of a lot of things. A lot of things have come to an end. It's not working anymore. It's very frustrating because we're still trying to. I've had a lot of projects in the past year or two that felt very much like it's just pushing this boulder uphill.
Yeah,
like, it's just trying to get to this end, and it used to be a lot easier than this. Like, it was a lot of work. So it used to be not easy, but it was simpler. You knew that if you did A, B, and C, then D would happen. And now it feels like you're doing A through Z, or A through W, and then X, Y, Z.
No, it's not new.
I'm doing all the same things, and it's not happening. It's not moving forward. So there's a resistance. Like, we had the mini in the mud. We tried a couple of techniques and we got it out because there was some pushing and some finessing involved, right?
Mm-hmm.
But initially, trying to get it out there makes it worse. You're like digging it further and further in because it's not, maybe it needs to be directed a different way. You try to go out a different direction. So there's something there around where you want to put the energy or the exertion or the force or the effort. Because if we keep continuing to access
the issue, you have to go into the unknown.
Yeah.
It's just like because I experienced both worlds in that regard, because as you know, I'm an official classified, categorized as a content creator.
Yep. So you say. I'll never call you that, but that's okay.
Because we're creating content.
Yeah. Well,
I hate that word.
Well, like,
back in the days you were a writer.
That's what I'm saying. Today you're
But for text return you have to put down content creator. This is like now I'm in the same fucking box as this one of those influencers on Instagram who is like 20-year-old content creators who just like take photos of their nose and I get a million clicks for it.
Yep.
You know, and so obviously as a creator you are in the pool with the old and the new.
Yeah.
And it's an enormous struggle. So I struggle with that. And every morning I like, how am I going to do this?
Yeah.
I'm going to, what is actually the way forward? And the way I learned with it is I just do it and it suddenly comes in.
Yeah.
And I don't think too much about it.
Yeah.
So every time I focus on what's next, I actually don't focus on doing it. I actually focus on becoming.
Yeah.
And so that means I'm actually put myself into becoming me. And in that moment, I'm doing something and I suddenly observe myself. Ah, that's where it is.
Yeah.
So I'm discovering something from doing. And but I don't have the intent before. Obviously, I'm using practices such as Tai Chi, which is derived from the old.
Yeah.
You know, so in that regard, because it's ancient. But then they say it's not derived from this time. It comes from a different dimension. So it's timeless.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's still part of a progression of a timeline from the 1600s.
Yeah.
So it, in that regard, it belongs to the old. And so in that regard, we're using some stuff of the old, but then the idea is to surrender and allowing the guidance to come through.
Yeah.
And I discovered it through strength training lots. I find strength training is an incredible means of discovering what is actually new.
Yeah.
Because like when I do my TRX or my strengthening in the mornings, and I struggle with a certain idea I want to explore with an online course or whatever, and I don't know exactly which direction to take it because there's too many different old influences coming in, then I suddenly see something. But it's while I'm in the process of exerting myself, in the process of doing it, I have to dig into my energetics, and information is coming through to me. So the overall picture is that whoever created us is fully aware that this is what we're going through. It's part of the process.
Yeah.
Because it's yin and yang.
Yeah.
And the Chinese said right from the start, it's always yin and yang. That means it always will be transforming. So it will never, yang will never reach the point, that's it. It's complete and perfect now. And now it's going to stay yang forever.
Yeah.
And once it reaches its peak, yang, boom, it dies.
Yeah.
And it goes yin.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's what we're experiencing now. And so we got that. We can't go any further in the terms of that yang.
Yeah.
And we have to go yin.
Yeah.
You know? But then yin is an equal power to yang. It's just the opposite.
Yeah.
It's not like less power.
Yeah.
And it's not that it's less attractive. It's not like that it lacks less exciting. It's just a different side.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just like dealing with a different element.
Yeah.
But now it requires the design around the yin, the internal connection. So it's obviously a new way of approach. Like all design till now, the way I understand it, always acted on what people's desires were.
Yeah.
Well, you said, where did it come from?
It often creates, you know, it's creating people's, making them want something because of the way it looks. So it's creating a field of desire or creating their
but into something. It fits in with something that people somehow expect.
It kind of has to. Yeah, because if it's too out there, it doesn't work. It happens all the time, right? Something too far ahead of its time. So it has to hit the, feels new, but it's familiar.
But then it also has to make sense. Like if someone designs a car where this big fat tire and is just in line with the guards, it just looks good.
Well, yeah. I mean, that's subjective, but I think that's also true. There's some truths there, you know.
It's a universal truth.
Yeah.
If you look at the rear of the latest Porsche GT3, what they got at the rear, what rubber is that? A 385?
I don't know what it is. It's wider than
425 or something like that. Yeah. Something ridiculous. And it's just like, honestly, you can't put your finger between the guards and the tire. It's not possible.
Yeah.
And the car is just like not touching.
Yeah, that's why I think you spend 60 years on one car. Right.
Yeah.
Just every time it just gets a bit better.
Yeah. I remember when I flared my guards and put the bigger tires on back in the day when I had that BMW that was hitting the guards all the time and I blew tires and shit like this.
Designed for that. Yeah. Yeah. They're at the forefront. They're pioneering.
Because it looked good.
Yeah.
And you know, that it's a fact. I mean, when you look at a car from a sports car and it's got that negative amber, that means that the tires are actually facing inward rather than actually. Like X the other way.
Yep.
It looks ridiculous.
Yep.
And wheelbarrow wheels on a car don't look good. That's a fact.
No, it's the truth. We know that. Yeah. But in this situation, the Mini could do with some more off-road stuff.
Yeah, I'm going to look at how they're going to turn that Mini Cooper into a bush basher. And then, like, maybe just do it. First time ever, I'm going to lift it.
Yeah, lift.
And I'm going to put smaller rims on it.
Yeah, and trucky tires.
Truck tires.
Yeah, so maybe some big spotlights.
Yeah, and just maybe lift the whole thing by half a meter. Something. And then, and then sort of like, tractor tires.
Yep.
You know, so it's
right. Next time I come up, I expect to see that then.
Yeah, completely weird thing. So that's going to be a rally Mini.
Future Mini. Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. So it's in line with the design of the new
off grid Mini. Yeah.
Yeah. So make the Mini a hippie Mini. A Mini suitable for hippie communes.
Well, it's full circle because that's where they started. They were very hippie cars and then became very, like, you know, city cars and race cars. So now you're just bringing it back to.
Yeah. Back in my days, it was like, it was like full on. Like the VW and the Mini were the hippie car.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. No one thought.
But even like the Minis were still race cars then. They were really formidable, like really low center of gravity and really fast, lightweight, you know, so.
Yeah. I mean, though I was a hippie, the Mini I had was like, was track proven.
So quick getaways then, was it?
I had the flowers on it.
Yeah.
Yeah, because obviously though in those days, the Minis had flowers painted on.
Yeah.
Because LeBron had the flared guards.
Yeah.
But the flared guards on the trousers.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, bell bottoms, yeah.
And then you obviously flared the guards of the Mini.
Yeah.
You know, I made that Mini so white. It was incredible. You know, it looked good. And then all these beautiful colors of flowers on, green flowers, purple flowers. It was awesome. And big exhaust, Abbott exhaust.
Abbott exhaust.
Yeah, this thing was good. All right.
More things change, the more they stay the same.
Let's get into the hippie idea.
Who knows where we're going to end that conversation where it started? Listen, it's
all time we've become hippies. That's what it is.
Yep.
We have to return to the hippie
life. Your roots.
Yeah. Hippie said it right. Now we return to the hippies. Yeah.
Not the bell bottoms, though. I won't wear those. I refuse to wear bell bottoms.
So, no, make love, not war. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. Till next time.
Be hippie.